to have not only not the worst happen, but the best happen, to go, oh, hey, I love you just the same. I suddenly, it feels like walking out of prison doors and going like, oh, I'm allowed to live life. I'm allowed to experience love. I'm allowed to believe something about myself that I never thought was available. It's incredible.
I am Liz Wright. Welcome to Live Your Best Life. The only thing that matters now is living by the power of this wonderful new creation life. We're going to become an undefeatable force of radiating glory, and we are rising up strong now in this hour. Hi, guys. Thank you for tuning in from all around the nations of the world for this week's what's going to be a really empowering, healing, hope-giving, special conversation, special episode of Live Your Best Life with, of course, me, Liz Wright. And my guest joining me for today's conversation, he leads a movement called the Whole Man Project. He's also the author of a very important book called Numb to Known, and is the host of a podcast with the same name, Numb to Known. He's also a coach. He works individually and he works alongside his wife, walking people through the journey, helping to support and empower them as they move into a place of wholeness. You are going to hear some of his story today. You're going to receive very powerful keys, and like I said, a lot of hope from this conversation with the amazing Aaron Zint. Aaron, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Liz.
Yeah, I'm so honored that you would jump on. I'm just so thankful because the conversation today is very needed, right? I mean, it's just all the content that you share, all the tools that you provide people with you as they're journeying from, you know, very vulnerably from a place of a lot of pain and sometimes a lot of shame and isolation, you know, and you walk with them, equipping and empowering them to come into a place of liberty and, you know, wholeness. And it's just, it's very inspirational. When I was listening to your podcast and I was reading your content, it was just, it really inspired me. And I realize how vulnerable you are, how open you are, and how much experience you now have to be able to provide people with keys that really do work. And I tell you, Aaron, one of the other things that really impacted me was you also give us women insight into the interior life of the men in our lives so that we can shift perhaps from a place of reaction through not really understanding the interior life of men, to having a lot more understanding of how you guys think and feel and process and live inside yourselves. So, like I said, so that we can actually be a support and a strength and appropriately react and interact with our precious men, the men in our lives. So that was something that was such a gift to me. So I want to sort of include that in our conversation today. To begin with, for people that don't know your story, can we start there? Can you share with us a little bit of your journey, what you of, which has obviously birthed such a passion and compassion in you to help other people?
Yeah, thanks for that. I grew up a Christian and grew up in a believing household, and my parents, I'm still connected with them today, and they're still married and still following the Lord. I didn't really have a connection with Jesus himself until I was about a sophomore in high school. And so leading up to that, I was just kind of living, you know, I was a kid, but I was still just living this, living to get what I can get out of life, not for anybody else, not for anything else other than myself. Kind of a somewhat of a typical story, except that there was a lot of early sexuality introduced in childhood that, you know, no kid should be introduced to any kind of sexuality at such a young age. And so I'd seen porn, I think at the age of 7 was the first time I'd seen it, and had some sexual encounters with older kids, even younger than that, that kind of set me up for when porn was introduced, for that to hit something in my heart that it really shouldn't have hit in a specific way. So there was sexual abuse that I had experienced, and these experiences that kind of created a hypersexual childhood, which is just, it's pretty damaging for a developing brain to experience things like that, and to experience what we know porn is called a supernormal stimulus. It's something that kind of hijacks dopamine in the brain that gives you kind of like a drug-like experience. And so pretty damaging, and leading, it became an addiction even into very early. And back then, porn wasn't as accessible as it is now. And so the intensity of the addiction and the pursuit of sexuality just increased with the frequency and availability of it on the internet. And so I finally had an encounter with God my sophomore year of high school that sent me on a trajectory. Like, I really was passionate about him. I wanted to follow him. And so I experienced a period of about 2 years following that, in which I didn't have any issues with porn. There were moments of struggle, but tons of victory. And it was incredible. And as I moved into adulthood, graduating from high school and going doing a school of ministry and exploring just kind of the new big world, there were parts of my heart that even in this initial encounter with the Lord that I hadn't really opened up or even really known to open up to both him and other people, let alone knowing it myself. And those things that were underneath the surface that needed attention and care and healing, because they hadn't been addressed in that time frame, it was a mixture of the culture that I was in, or the what we didn't know about porn, what we didn't know about sexuality. That all started coming to the surface. Even into, I got married at the age of 21. My wife is who I do all the stuff with today, our podcast and our coaching. Even in 3 years into marriage, I was still struggling with going back to porn, and just unwanted sexual behavior in general, kept going back to it. And I would pray, I would confess, I would get prayer, and I just could not figure out what was happening. Why is this so difficult when I have such a strong conviction? One of my core values, everything in me says, never again. I never want this. There's something happening that is so, it's such an intense driving force that I'm willing to break my convictions, break my wife's heart over and over, harm my own heart over and over. What is this thing? And so I eventually joined this men's group that we have at our church that I now lead, the Whole Man Project. It had different names back then, but what I discovered in this group, these guys brought something else to the surface. They basically said, "Hey, just so you know, porn is a check engine light. It's not. It's something that is telling you there's something going on beneath the surface that needs attention." And so, some of our strategies, and my strategy definitely had been to put tape over the check engine light, so to speak. If I had a mechanic who did that, I'd fire him right away. But to go, okay, let's just get rid of the quote unquote problem of porn without addressing the underlying issues that are driving the porn use, we'll keep going back. I can white knuckle for a while. I have willpower and self-control enough for a while. But when these underlying issues that have gone unmet, they build up pressure, and after a while, it demands a relief. And so I have some thankfulness in that I know people who don't struggle with porn but struggle with the same underlying issues. And here, the beauty of porn being as damaging as it was is it forced me to do something about it. I don't wish porn addiction or sex addiction of any kind on anyone. I am thankful, though, that the consequences were serious enough that it forced me to go, I need something that I haven't had before. And so I started to recognize the areas that were driving this behavior, areas like isolation, passivity, and pain. And each of these areas came up at different points within the last 13-year journey that I've been on, discovering what it is that's causing isolation, passivity, and pain, what I need to do. And in doing so, beginning to find relief from the need for porn. And then finding how to kind of change my lifestyle in a way that is conducive to living in the freedom that Jesus paid for. And so that's, I think that's a good overview of my story.
Yeah, thank you so much. And also, thank you for your vulnerability because it really does help lift the veil of shame off people and bring this extremely important topic mainstream because it is a massive issue in the church, isn't it?
Oh,
Worldwide,
yeah.
when you look at the research and the statistics, and we don't want anybody isolated, sitting in that pain, struggling on their own. And I love what you said, that it isn't the actual issue. There are driving needs for pushing behind this behavior. So to help us women understand you men as well a little bit more, I mean, obviously with what you share, it brings understanding to men and women, language for us to understand the internal world of a man. Can I ask you to go there a little bit more for us? Like, what is for you, what was the internal process that was going on as a Christian man struggling with this? What did you begin to understand was driving it? What were the actual root needs that needed to be attended to stop the behavior?
This porn is in, especially in recovery circles, they commonly refer to it as an intimacy disorder. And so the isolation, what was happening inside of me was I did, especially because of the abuse and the things that I had experienced early on in my life, and then there, as the result of trying to cope with some of those experiences, my behavior that began to happen even at a young age, there was so much shame, like you said, that was attached to all of those memories, all of those experiences, even experiences that I was not complicit in, even experiences of abuse. There was so much shame attached to the fact that I had been abused. And as a child, developmentally, it's safer for a child to believe that they are the problem than the adult is the problem, who is the, say, abuser, or the one who, even if it's not straight up abuse, just if a child feels shame from an adult, the child doesn't naturally think, oh, I bet my parent or whomever the adult, I bet they're having a hard day and they're taking it out on me. That's not natural for a child. And so it is actually safer psychologically for them to take ownership. And so when you embody so much shame, I am wrong, I am bad, I am the reason that any of these bad things happen. We know this from statistics on divorce and how children internalize blame for their parents' divorce, even though rationally that doesn't make any sense to an adult, to an underdeveloped brain, that's what happens. So I grew up with this overwhelming sense that I am bad, and at my core is just wrong. I am just wrong. Now, there's a sense within our theology where we go, hey, I know that I don't have good things in me. I need Jesus to come change that. When you have Jesus and he changes you and you're a new creation, that is supposed to shift. There's supposed to be an exchange that happens. And there was a lack in the exchange for sure because of some of these underlying beliefs. And so there's a bit of your behavior feeds into your perception of your identity, and there's a lot of your identity, your perception of yourself, feeds into your behavior. And so this awareness that, oh, I am just naturally bad to my core. I am a sex is my greatest need is kind of some of the belief systems that are happening behind that. Even though I wouldn't articulate that, because there are belief systems in the heart that don't translate to the head. So anybody would ask me, hey, do you believe that you're bad and that sex is your greatest need? I'd say, no, of course not. Well, some of the other core beliefs would be, if I have to, in order to get my needs met, I have to rely on myself. I cannot rely on other people. And again, I would not have articulated that, but that your behavior will tell you what you believe to be true more than what you say you believe to be true. And so that's what I was experiencing as a Christian, is I hate this thing so much. I hate what it does. I hate everything about it. Even in the midst of acting out, I can be hating it and feel like I can't stop or else I won't be okay. And there's this like thing underneath, this kind of low thrum of anxiety, of pressure, of if I don't get this, we maybe call it a fix. If I don't experience this high in this moment, if I don't click on that thing or reach for that thing, I don't know that I'm going to be okay. And it is what we hear in a lot of couples coachings that my wife and I do, and what I hear from a lot of men as they're sharing me with what their wives are experiencing. It feels like such a personal attack on the wife. Like, am I not good enough? Don't I do X, Y, Z? And it feels so personal. And so, and that's understandable. I can, if the roles were reversed, I have so much compassion for what these women are going through. And I try to help men when I'm working specifically with men, I'm trying to help them go, they're like, I don't understand. It's not about her. And I go, you and I know this isn't about her. And this is, there's no good. Your wife could be the, you know, right under Jesus. If there was a hierarchy, she could be right up there, and it would not change what's happening inside of you, because this is an inside of you thing. And so even though I know you and me know that, and I'm talking to the guy, even though you and me know that, your wife is feeling this nonetheless. So your job is not to defend yourself to her, but to take care of the very hurting parts. When we're talking with wives specifically, the conversation with them is to say, hey, just so you know, like, your husband is hurting, and there are things inside of him that are very young. Like, there's one of the ways of looking at kind of emotional health is we have these different parts of us that have been hurt in childhood that got stunted. And so we have emotional ways of responding to the world, beliefs about God that are very childish, but not in like a childlike way, in an immature way. There are thoughts and beliefs that go, oh, if I feel this, it's going to be forever. I cannot handle this. I need to go pacify this. I need something to cope with. These are all like very immature ways of experiencing the world. But these are what a lot of men are experiencing. So when we talk to a wife, just go, hey, just so you know, like, you couldn't be better and fix this. So this isn't about you, and also your pain is very real, and we don't ever want to invalidate that. So trying to get people to understand, to like start to have some compassion, if at all possible, especially for yourself, as you lean into what healing looks like, because there's so much self-contempt and shame and tactics and strategies that the enemy uses, that we try to use sometimes to get motivate ourselves to do better, that the Lord simply doesn't use because he knows it doesn't work. And so when we see Jesus healing all throughout the scriptures, being first led by compassion. And even for in Isaiah, I think, I've heard people go, yeah, you know, I'm glad that you're helping these guys. Just remember, like, they're not victims. They're the ones they're the ones making these choices. And yes, while that is true, I also know in Isaiah, he said he wants to set the prisoners free. And they're the people who are there for a reason. And he treats them the same as captives and the same as the broken and the hurting. And so I feel like the Lord's compassion is just so strong for people who are trapped, who are prisoners, even by their own actions, but they are prisoners nonetheless. And he has just as much compassion, heart, and kindness to set them free as he does the people who've been taken captive who didn't choose that.
Yeah, that's just it. That is such a helpful perspective. Bringing understanding, I think, well, the compassion, it's essential, isn't it? Because like you said, the driving force behind this behavior is from childhood. So there are younger parts of people's hearts that are acting out and pushing and wanting emotional needs met. And just to have that understanding that this began in childhood, where you were not set up in that environment for success. You know, there were huge needs that were not met. You know, there was clearly deficit in your life that has caused you to form and become an adult, your brain to develop, like you said, and to become the adult with the behaviors that you now have, which are really you as an adult trying to get these childhood needs met and the dysfunction, you know, healed.
Yeah. So
that's super helpful, because actually for those supporting people with this struggle and those who are actually in the midst of the struggle, this is a very important lens to see ourselves through, right? Mm-hmm. It's a journey into wholeness from a place in your life where you just were not, like I said, were not such a success at that time. And they're probably being brought up and affected by people again who had also been victimized by racism, so it continues, the pattern continues. So yeah, that's really, really helpful. We have to ask the Lord really to for that help, don't we, to in that right perspective, so we can begin to the journey, place of strength and truth. So for people who are struggling right now with this, what are some of the most helpful tools that you provide for people spiritually and practically that can really support them as they begin to move forward into liberty?
Well, the number one thing that I say is you cannot do this alone. You have to get in a group. You have to get in relationship with people where you are actively pursuing healing in this area, not alone. Because if this is an intimacy disorder, if this is an isolation problem, then the antidote to that has to be connection. The antidote to that has to be, and by connection, I don't just mean spending more time with people, because you have guys who are having the same struggle who are surrounded by great people. You have people, even men who are in the school of ministry that I was in, myself being in a school ministry where I am like impacted like crazy and having God encounters left and right. And yet this isolation, this thing that I hold back internally because of the shame, because of lots of different things, keeps me isolated from the healing touch that I believe the Lord wants to bring many times through other people. So I believe this is the number one thing is you have to get connected to people and start sharing what reality looks like for you right now. The reality, and this is where the vulnerability part comes in, is you have to share your secrets. You have to share your experiences of pain, your experiences of shame. The antidote to shame is bringing it into the light. Because shame, originally shame goes, we need to hide and stay hidden. And you say Adam and Eve in the garden, the very first thing they do is hide after taking a bite. And they hide from the only one who has ever shown them kindness, compassion, and given them life. And they have no reason other than this thing inside of them that goes, hey, it's unsafe. The only way is to bring that stuff out into the light. And it's terrifying to do, because there is a voice inside of us that says, if I share this, I will be rejected. I will not be loved anymore. I will be left. People will see how bad I am and they will leave me. And the only antidote to that is to share it and find out that that's not true. You can say it all you want, but you need to experience the healing of somebody hearing your story and just going, hey, thanks for sharing. I love you. I feel the same way about you now as I did before. Probably more compassion, but not less. That's for sure. And to share something that I swore that I would never tell anyone in my entire life, to share that and have these guys in the circle just look at me and go, good job, man. Proud of you. And to go, oh my gosh, I literally thought it would be world ending for that to get out. And for me to share that and these guys to go, hey, we love you. That makes a lot of sense. And even many times, because I have many of these stories and secrets that I shared over the years, many times having the guys go, oh, that same exact thing happened to me, or I've done that same exact thing, and to go, I thought I was the only disgusting, perverted, broken one, at least on this level, in the entire world. And to have guys go, hey, you're not alone, is profoundly healing to the heart, to the brain, and honestly allows me to receive unconditional love from men, and also the Lord. Ken Williams at our church has this quote in his book. He says, it's hard to receive unconditional love unless somebody knows the condition you're in.
Oh, that's profound. Yeah.
What I hold back and cannot let somebody see, it's hard to receive love that covers everything when I don't let it cover some things. Yeah. I have to actually let the love that wants to cover everything into the light. And we know the Lord knows all this stuff, but there's something that he built into our bodies and brains. We were made in the image of a we, not an I. And so it is important that he goes, there are other people here for a reason. And I actually want to bring healing that you can only experience through the face of another person hearing your story and loving you nonetheless. And so that is the number one thing that I think people need. you can work on healing stuff in your heart. You can work on passivity, but if you stay in isolation, you will never experience wholeness as Jesus paid for.
That's profound, Aaron, to be known, to be known. What did it feel like? Do you remember the moment where you actually in your heart knew, for the first time in my life, I'm actually known and accepted for who I truly am? Like for you.
I feel teary just thinking about that. It's such a life-changing moment, because it's everything that you fear the worst is going to happen. And then to have somebody to have not only not the worst happen, but the best happen, to go, oh, hey, I love you just the same. I suddenly, it feels like walking out of prison doors and going like, oh, I'm allowed to live life. I'm allowed to experience love. I'm allowed to believe something about myself that I never thought was available. It's incredible. It's incredible. And it's addicting in and of itself to go, what other secrets do I have that have kept me trapped for so long? I can't, even though they're still terrifying to get out. And each time that a new one like might surface, I go, ah, not that one. And then I gather my courage, because I remember what it's like, and I bring it to these guys, and the guys again, or my wife, experienced that with her sharing some pain that was just like, so burdensome. And to have her just be with me in it, just to have some witness, is suddenly go, oh, I'm not alone. And this is what it feels like to be known.
It's just beautiful. I know I feel really undone listening to you. It's, you're giving people right now such a gift, because if we can just press through that pain barrier, you know, and with safe hearts, obviously,
yes,
putting ourselves with safe hearts, our lives are completely changed. And I love what you said as well. We're not made in the image of an I. Yes, I am, but he's three in one.
Yeah.
We're made in the image of we, you know, we are relational beings. We've been created to have relationship and connection. And life flows from that place, doesn't it? And safety and healing is a way that God created us and wants that and gives grace to it. I wanted to ask you as well, so for those of us, you know, who are wanting to be a support and helping us understand men in a different way, and women, you know, this is you know, sexual addiction in all different forms is both men and women struggle with this, right? Because these are the unmet childhood needs driving our life, and it just gets different expression, doesn't it? Different addiction form, where we're looking for things externally to meet those needs in an acute way. But I wanted to ask you, how can we be safe hearts? How can we help the other who's struggling feel that acceptance? Like drawing from your wife, I mean, who's obviously on an amazing journey with you, been an amazing support, and now you're empowering others to do the same. What do you encourage people to do to be able to be that safe heart where others get free? Get with them.
That's a really good question. I think there's a couple things. One, understanding the nature of addiction helps kind of create this separation between my husband's behavior and my identity. Yeah. And I obviously, we know that's actually important for anybody with any behavior to be able to separate your own behavior from your identity. That's hard. But a necessary part of our journey, and to be able to separate your husband's behavior from his identity and from yours. So understanding addiction, I believe, does help with that a lot, because it brings compassion to go, oh, he's not just, he just, it's not that he doesn't care about me, and it's not that he is weak. So that's one, understanding. The compassion for understanding the fact that this is largely pain management. And we think about this in people who are on drugs or even people who are on prescription drugs that are abusing it. There's a pain management kind of program running it. And this is like the tale as old as time from the enemy of like, how do I get rid of this pain, but do it in a way quickly and without knowing that there's a better answer. So understanding that, kind of giving some compassion. As for wives, especially, passivity is a part of this equation. And so what I mean by passivity is sometimes men are avoiding taking ownership. They may be avoiding doing uncomfortable, hard things, like creating a plan or telling another guy what he's struggling with. And so while I say first with compassion, because shame, we just know shame doesn't work. So even when there is a lot of anger and feelings of betrayal, and those are understandable, I'd say get yourself in connection with other women, other supports while you're in this with your husband. So get connection and support yourself so you can take good care of your heart. But what you bring to your husband, if you can, is compassion, because compassion heals and shame does not. It cannot. And so with compassion, though, is also, hey, what are you going to do? And what are you going to do different than you've done before? Because there is an insanity part to any kind of addictive or compulsive behavior. And the insanity is, man, I hope it gets better. And then not doing anything different than you did before. And so it is okay to hold your husband to a higher standards and go, I love you. I am so sorry that you're struggling with this, because I know you don't want this. And I know this isn't about me. And what are you going to do? And that's where I do the things that I do, because I want men to have an option. And there are men, I'm not the only one. There are many, many options out there for working on wholeness and pursuing freedom. And honestly, it doesn't, as long as you go somewhere and get known, you're already starting on the right path. So I'd say it's okay. It's okay to go, I need you to come up with a plan, and I need that to involve other people. I need that to involve other men. And so sometimes that is not most of the guys. There's a good number of men who join our men's group, the Whole Man Project, or who get coaching from me, or who join my online small groups, because their wife said, I need you to do something about this. And they go, okay, I will. They finally relent or something like that. And that's okay. We make big decisions out of pain or vision many times. And pain is a motivator, and it works. We don't want to stay there. However, when you're in pain, like, let it push you to find help that you need.
Yeah, just so powerful. So powerful.
Thanks.
When you speak, there's so much hope that's being released, because you're the living proof that the tools once applied, you know, the wisdom of God in a practical mm-hmm. and in a spiritual application really do bring liberty.
Yeah.
You know, thank you for sharing your journey in the public space. You know, I'm sure it hasn't been easy, you know.
No.
The fruit is huge. So just in finishing, I just wanted to ask you, where can people get hold of you if this mm-hmm. is something that they really need? How do they get hold of you?
Yeah. So we have my wife and I have a website where we kind of house all the different things we do. It's called vintsquad.com, Z-I-N-T squad, S-Q-U-A-D.com. And that's where we do, my wife has a lot of amazing life-changing things that she does. And then, so we do coaching, and the book link is there, the online small groups, my wife's habit courses. But that's the place you can find us on Marriage Lab. That's our podcast, my podcast, Numb to Known. But yeah, those are all the places you can reach out. In the very least, my email is my first and last name at Gmail, aaronzint@gmail.com. Just reach out and I can point people in the right direction. So.
So good. So good. Thank you for giving us your precious time and sharing your story. It's been really amazing talking with you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's been an honor.
And guys, thank you for tuning in for today's extremely empowering, I'm sure, conversation. And do feel free to reach out, as Erin has said, if this is something you're struggling with, or you can recommend it to other people. We have a passion, all of us, right, to see the body of Christ whole. And so, you know, if you need to reach out, please feel free to do that, and have the most amazing week. And I look forward to being with you again next week. God bless. Every week, either myself or other trusted friends of mine bring the Word of God as a doorway where you can then enter in and experience the heart of God. We now have thousands of testimonies of people encountering the heart of God, some for the first time. I want to extend a personal invitation to you to join the IMC and come on this incredible journey together with us.